Hi, I'm Jefferson Fernandez, neurologist, and we're pleased to be here at the Converge to Accelerate Symposium 2023. I'll be the moderator of our panel, which is called Challenges in Digital Health, from Telemedicine to Artificial Intelligence. And together with me are two other Brazilian physicians in my left, Dr. Gustavo Meirelles, and also Dr. Claudio Giuliano da Costa, which I'll introduce later on more properly. So let's go straight forward to the first presenter, that will be myself. I will just share my screen with you, and you should start in a moment. Okay, here we go. So the topic that I'm going to quickly talk with you is AI in telemedicine. Just a brief presentation of myself. I am a neurologist, as I mentioned. I coordinate the Telemedicine Digital Health Education Program of the Medical Association of São Paulo in Brazil, and also another MBA focused on digital health and management. I'm a member of the Digital Health Committee of the Brazilian Medical Association, and also as regional editor for Latin America telehealth in medicine today, which you know, and also coordinates, I'm one of the coordinators of the Key Knowledge in Digital Health Immersion course at the Nova Medical School in Lisbon, Portugal, and also director of education program of the International Society for Telemedicine and eHealth. We are based in Geneva, Switzerland. So just to call attention to something that probably most of you know, telemedicine is one of the main innovations in healthcare. There are a lot of benefits that we can get from telemedicine. And there is a lot of scientific research and also data from real world that shows that it increases accessibility to healthcare services, improve the quality of medical care, contributes to improve clinic outcomes and improve organization efficiency. I could list other 10 or 20, but let's keep with these ones. And when we bring together an artificial intelligence into telemedicine, it expands and improves the capabilities of telemedicine. You can enhance the patient experience, improve and speed screening and diagnosis of diseases, make diagnosis more precise and personalize it, and contribute to the implementation of the continuity of care throughout the citizen's life cycle, though following the journey of our patient, but also the journey of our clinicians. There are, of course, several challenges for the integration of artificial intelligence into the everyday healthcare practice. We have to take into account safety issues, ethical, accuracy. If AI is helping in diagnosis process, we need to know the accuracy, the number of false positives, percentage of false positives or false negatives. If it's helping in terms of efficacy, efficiency of a treatment, also we need to have clinical trials, specific trials directed to artificial intelligence or other technologies to show that it's really delivering what is promising. Of course, we have regulatory issues and financial aspects, which are also very important. And the benefit of AI will need to be convincing enough for the medical community and the patients to adopt the technology. So we're seeing now this evolution, and during and after the pandemic, this is also increasing very much because we know the importance and benefits of that. So AI may be proven to be more accurate than a physician and in situations that human cannot have though a lot of experience. However, we cannot expect the algorithms will be able to replace the comprehensive knowledge, experience, and the role of physicians, mainly the human aspects of the relationship of clinicians to patients. I'll give two examples of the use of AI in telemedicine. The first one is related to telephthalmology and AI. And let's take an example of diabetic retinopathy. And we know that early screening and timely treatment can reduce the burden of sight-threatening. So telephthalmology programs usually can use digital retinal images that are sent to a centralized reading center for assessment for the presence of diabetic retinopathy. And these AI systems embedded in telemedicine screening programs could analyze retinal images for diagnosis or to compare with previous samples to determine the stage of the diabetic retinopathy. And some studies have shown that the available automated imaging systems and devices still have a sensitivity and specificity below 90%. So false positives and false negative results may occur. And the physicians should be aware of that. And I like, as many other people, to instead of saying artificial intelligence, to say augmented intelligence, because in the final words, diagnosis or in treatment should be done by the physician. Deep learning, a subfield of AI, has been also used in teleophthalmology for screening and diagnosis of other vision disorders, such as eye refraction, glaucoma, and age-related macular degeneration. Another area where AI is being implemented together with telemedicine is in telestroke. And we know that algorithms and platforms can provide automated information about various components of the acute stroke triage pathway and also to the clinical workflow to optimize the delivery of stroke care at spoke and hub hospitals in telestroke program. Could be in pre-hospital notifications to the emergency room that will alert incoming stroke, allows adequate preparation for the appropriate management of the patient, such as the type or the characteristics of the stroke. And then the stroke care teams will be able also to take the decisions of treatment, could be neuro intervention, could be neurosurgical, and this stage also can have support from AI solutions. A deep learning algorithm, if this is well known in CT or magnetic resonance, can identify stroke location, the classification of stroke, hemorrhage, ischemic, the type of each one of them, and also the severity. And it's important because if we identified the penumbra, or meaning the salvage tissue, the actions that could be taken immediately can make a huge difference for the patient recovery or for its prognosis. So intracranial hemorrhage and subtypes, and there is some solutions that try to detect tiny hemorrhages that maybe the eye, human eye, could not perceive, but these systems can help in identifying and decreasing the chance of error. Can also identify midline shift and mass effect and large vessel occlusion in ischemic strokes. I'm going to show here two of these solutions. One is Aspects. It's one of the different solutions, a software that is being used in CT scans to using a great system for assessing the extent of early stroke and also in the selection of the process of thrombolysis and of thrombectomy candidates. And the other one is the rapid system. Just me show here. Okay, here it goes. And Rapid is being used around the world. It's a neuroimaging software that collects and analyzes data from the CT perfusion scan and provides real-time view of brain perfusion, a quantitative volume of brain tissue that is irreversibly damaged, and the volume of tissue that can be detected and can be recovered if blood flow can be restored quickly. So these are both examples of the use of digital solutions that have artificial intelligence integrated to it. So this is a short presentation, and it's important to understand that future studies are needed to validate all these techniques using AI for its widespread use. But what we have up now has already brought a significant improvement in treatment decisions and clinical outcomes. So this is what I wanted to show for you. And now, keeping into my time, as now I would like to invite Dr. Gustavo Meirelles. He's a physician. He's a chairman of the board at Remote Diagnostic Intelligence Company. He has 20 plus years of experience as a radiologist and healthcare executive. He has also been a columnist for the MIT Sloan Management Review in Brazil, and has published more than 100 scientific articles in indexed journals and more than 50 published book chapters and 800 more lectures presented at national and international meetings. So with this bio, I ask for Gustavo to talk about his topic, which is AI in healthcare, opportunities and threats. Gustavo, the screen is yours.
Thank you so much, Jefferson. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and thanks for the invitation. So in my next 10 minutes, I'm going to present a little bit about threats and opportunities with the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare. So let me just share my screen here. Okay, so AI is now one of the main topics when we talk about innovation in healthcare. And I want to start with the recent publication of the Hype Cycle for Emerging Technologies by Gartner. And as they do every single year, they will present us with those technologies that are presented here at the Innovation Trigger, those which are at the peak of inflated expectations. And here you can see the large language models. So ChatGPT, Bard, and other softwares like this. So AI and those kinds of technologies in healthcare are being more and more used. And as a physician, and also as an enthusiast of innovation in healthcare, I see lots of opportunities with artificial intelligence in healthcare, not only for the diagnostic sector, but for healthcare as a whole. So I see opportunities for automating business processes, gaining efficiency, error reduction, improving quality, and also empowering physicians. So as you're going to see in my next slides, I believe in the combination of humans and machines to offer to patients the best in class in healthcare. So just to show you a little bit more about some uses of AI in healthcare. This was a patient of mine, a 42 years old female with a disease called Sjögren's syndrome. And she had some strained muscles in the legs and also chest pain. So there was a suspicion for blood clots in her pulmonary arteries. And then she was submitted to a chest CT. And we are using at that time one AI software that points out urgent conditions like blood clots, and we call this pulmonary embolism. And you can see here the widget, and also errors by the software pointing to blood clots in the pulmonary arteries. So in a question of seconds, we can see the disease, and then as radiologists, we could start with that report and then call the referring physician, and in a matter of a few minutes, that patient was receiving the correct treatment for the pulmonary embolism. Another good indication of AI in healthcare was a joint work done by different companies in Brazil during the pandemic. And this project called RedVid-19 was done to give access to Brazilian patients and to Brazilian physicians to the best AI softwares, not only for detecting COVID-19, as in this case. So you can see that this was a free program. Physicians from all over the country could upload images of chest CTs of patients with a clinical suspicion of COVID-19. And then that software was giving here the possibility of COVID-19 and also quantifying ground glass opacities in the lung parenchyma. So those are two types of uses of AI in healthcare. And again, I'm an optimist about AI in healthcare, but other people will see threats with artificial intelligence, such as the dependency of machines, human devaluation, something that we call de-skilling. It means that humans will be more and more incompetent to work with the new technologies, leading to unemployment and economic stagnation. So I don't believe in that, but well, we can remember of the ludists during industrial revolution some years ago in England in the 19th century. And they were trying to break some of the machines because they were afraid of losing their jobs for the machines. Well, I like this publication. This paper was submitted and published in PLOS ONE some years ago. And then they had used pigeons as trainable observers for detecting breast cancer in pathology and radiology images. And then after some time, pigeons would get more and more confident in detecting breast cancer, and they would be better than radiologists and pathologists for detecting the disease. And then what I say to some of my colleagues who are pessimists about AI in healthcare is that they shouldn't be afraid of new machines and, you know, large language models, but they should be afraid of pigeons, because pigeons in a matter of a few days can be better than radiologists and pathologists for detecting disease. So this is just a joke, but this points out to a change that we as physicians should be doing about our patient-physician relationship. So this is another paper published some years ago demonstrating that most of US patients don't have a very good perception about their doctors. So you can see here that positive words were quite rare and negative words were very often said by those patients, like, you know, my doctor is rude, arrogant, unconcerned. So there are many explanations for that. And one of the main explanations is the lack of time physicians all over the world. This is not different in Brazil from the United States. So more and more doctors have to take care of, you know, bureaucratic activities like taking notes on the electronic health record, having to call other physicians or having to call the insurance company, exchanging messages, having to be doing prescription refills, and in less than 50% of time, they will be with patients. So when I remember that painting performed by Sir Luke Field some years ago, I can see the doctor and the patient here, this child is in the center. If this was today, maybe the center is occupied by a computer, and we as doctors are more and more taking care of bureaucratic and repetitive activities and not taking care of our patients. This is a drawing which was done by a child. So her daughter, her sister was taken to an emergency room in the United States because she was ill. And after her her sister was discharged, she did that drawing and asked her mother to send to the pediatrician. And he was really sad with the drawing because he was here drawn looking at the computer and, you know, with the back to the patient and also to the family. And he said, well, we are investing more than $20 billion with new information technology, funding electronic medical record incentives. And what's the cost of all this? We are losing contact with our patients. And then I was looking at the physician of the future and trying to figure out who would be the future physicians. So this is a paper published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal many years ago. And I would like to reinforce here that they were writing that if the physician is to retain his status as a healer in the eyes of his patients, he will have to be fully aware of what's happening in the social and technology environment, or he or she will run the risk of being relegated to the position of a technician. So this is a point that every single physician should be afraid of. And Garry Kasparov, as one of the best chess players in history, after he was defeated by Deep Blue, which was a machine invented by IBM, he said, I don't think humans at the highest level should be playing against machines because we know the results. We're going to lose against machines if we keep doing human versus machines for chess. And then he had invented something called advanced chess or centaur chess. And then he with a machine would play against another chess player with a machine. And then the best combination would be not the best machine, not the best chess player. So I think the same should be applied to healthcare. What the computer needs actually is a good physician. So we should combine the two cultures, creativity, the fact of being adaptive and intuitive, to the best features of a machine like consistency, preciseness, and also being objective. So this is what we call the centaur doctor, getting the best of the two worlds. So for the new large language models, such as GPT-4 and beyond, I believe that they are going to provide more access to healthcare knowledge all over the world. So we can promote medical information and help not only physicians, but patients with the best assistance with clinical decision-making. When I think of a country like Brazil, which is huge and very diverse, many people, 75% of our population, are covered by the public healthcare system, and most of them won't have access to good medical information. So GPT-4 and other softwares can also create educational materials and help in the prevention of burnout among healthcare professionals. So finally, I gave that kind of I've asked GPT-4 about the favorite quote from a medical doctor. And this was done yesterday. And then it's very interesting to see that GPT-4 answered that, well, at first, that it doesn't have personal preferences or feelings, but he remembers a notable quote from a medical doctor, which is Sir William Osler. The good physician treats the disease, and the great physician will treat the patient who has the disease. So it's quite interesting to see that a machine is remembering us as humans to be more human. So I will end with that. The physician of the present, not of the future, should be part of the patient care team, should interact with patients and other doctors, define service and performance protocols, lead multidisciplinary meetings, guarantee quality, and he or she should have an active posture, being present and available. And then again, I go to the physician of the future, and this is not a real doctor. So this is this was done by Midjourney, another large language model for not for text but for images. And then we can see here a female doctor with a stethoscope, looking at the world as a whole, and with a smartphone here. So combining human and machine qualities. I will end with a quote of Walter Isaacson, who has written The Innovators, a great book about technology. And he said that the innovation will come from people who are able to link beauty to engineering, humanity to technology, and finally, poetry to processors. Thank you very much. And I will give back the word here to Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gustavo, for your brilliant presentation. You pinpoint several aspects that are very important to discuss as regarding the practice of artificial intelligence or augmented intelligence in the medical and in the health field. Now I would like to call our other colleague from Brazil, Claudio Juliano da Costa. Claudio is a physician, master of science and doctoral in health informatics. He's a certified professional in healthcare information and management systems. He was a former president of the Brazilian Health Informatics Association, and currently he's CEO of the Volks Health IT Consulting, a HIMSS digital health technology preferred partner for Latin America. And Claudio talk with us about evaluating digital maturity for healthcare organizations. Claudio, it's your time.
Okay, thank you, Jefferson. Gustavo, it's a pleasure to be here to talk about this so exciting subject. In the digital health scenario, AI is transforming the healthcare delivery. I'm sure that we are facing an inflection time when we replace a lot of process, a lot of way to deliver patient care. And I will start my presentation about the evaluating digital maturity for healthcare organization, because it's very important to have a digital scenario ready to adopt the AI. It's mandatory to be digital, to use the whole potential of AI. Due to this, we need to be more digital in our healthcare organizations. The physician should be more digital to have the capacity to use the so high potential that AI and telemedicine has to help physicians to care the patient. As Gustav said, it's very important to recognize some threats of the AI, but it's also very important to recognize the potential of AI and telemedicine to transform the healthcare around the world, including in Brazil, and to achieve this level, we need to be digital. And how can we start evaluating our current situation, create a plan, and based on this plan, in this methodology, we achieve a higher level in terms of digital maturity. I will share my presentation now. As you can see here, okay, great. So as Jefferson presented me, I'm a physician, completely dedicated my time during the last years for digital health, helping healthcare organizations to achieve a higher level in terms of digital maturity. Before we start in my subject, I love some presentations from John Halanka from Mayo Clinic Platform. And in a video, John Halanka said that AI will not replace doctors and nurses, but nurses and doctors who use AI will replace doctors and nurses who don't. So it's a tool we need to use. We need to know how to use that. And in this way, we can have a higher patient care delivery. Well, when we are talking about evaluating digital maturity, we need to recognize that we have different levels of this evaluation. The first level, it's a more superficial evaluation based in some methodology. I will share some methodology that usually it's available to evaluate a digital maturity in a healthcare organization. The first one is a model that we developed by by folks to evaluate digital maturity. We also can use a lot of other methodology, especially around the world. It's very common to use the HIMSS maturity model to evaluate the digital maturity. It's also important to go deep and evaluate some process using other methodology. And finally, some master data that the majority of our health information system use to manage data. So the first, I'd like also share some thoughts from ChatGPT about how evaluate digital maturity in a healthcare organization. First point, it's very important to have, it's a framework to use as a methodology to evaluate digital maturity. It's so important to identify key metrics because we need to evaluate the impact of a digital transformation. It's important to define, for example, the physician satisfaction. We need to talk about the telemedicine services and how can you we integrate telemedicine services in the care delivery. It's a new normal, especially during the pandemic time. We need to have a self-assessment to evaluate and give some recommendation, use this recommendation to create a plan. It's very important to considering some external benchmark. If I know where we are, it's possible to compare organization in terms of the level of digital maturity. We also need to use some tools to evaluate data management and analytics. See the interoperability, patient engagement, very important indicator of maturity nowadays. Workflow optimization, how the workflow in a healthcare organization, it's efficient or not. It's digital or a lower level of digitalization. It's important, another aspect related more for training in the future. And finally, create a roadmap and regular reviews to guarantee that we are in a correct way. To do that, a lot of methodologies is available. It's Digital Maturity Index for Healthcare. During the last 4 years, we have been evaluating healthcare organization in Latin America, not only in Brazil. And as you can see in this chart, it's a dispassion chart that presents the level of digital maturity. When you are evaluating a hospital, for example, we must consider not only the technology adoption, but also the digital journey readiness. It's very useful to see aspects like governance, culture, structure, architecture, and also infrastructure to guarantee that the organization is ready to adopt the information technology, to adopt telemedicine tools, to adopt AI tools. So it's important to be ready to adopt this technology. It's an important dimension we are in the moment of the evaluation. In Brazil, we have been evaluating this. We in average in Brazil, we are around the 44% of the maturity in terms of digital maturity maturity. We also have been using a telehealth maturity index that evaluate telehealth services in terms of the digital maturity as well. Going deep, there is nowadays 7 HIMSS maturity models that was developed by HIMSS, a healthcare, it's a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a methodology to transform healthcare. It's also HIMSS recognized for very important HIMSS conference not only US and in also other countries in other continents. And HIMSS has 7 maturity models, 1 more for hospital, another more for ambulatory side, another maturity model dedicated to evaluate the analytics capacity, infrastructure, and also the supply chain. For now, HIMSS don't have a specifically AI assessment. And also, they don't have nowadays a tool to evaluate telemedicine services. In another way, some capacities in these maturity models have the possibility to evaluate the digital maturity in, for example, in clinical decision support. It's a key point in the EMBRA model to evaluate the capacity of a hospital to use clinical decision support to help physician to a better patient assessment and create a plan to create a great care plan for this patient. It's some evaluation that is conducted by HIMSS. Embron is there is a possibility to evaluate online using Embron Express. It's also another way to evaluate the digital maturity from HIMSS using Embron baseline score. It generates some informs, some reports, something like that, showing the stage. All maturity models from HIMSS has 8 stages from 0 to 7. And also it's possible to have a gap assessment, a deep analysis. And finally, we need to see the process, how the AI or telemedicine services could be part of in a health, in a care delivery process, or in a pharmacy, or perhaps in the OR or in ER, how to adopt the technology in the moment when the patient is receiving the care. So a lot of possibilities to evaluate. And this is my last slide. So some methodologies that's available to evaluate digital maturity as a base, as a fundamental to adopt AI, to adopt telemedicine and other key technology to help the physician, to help the healthcare organization to care the patient much better using all these capabilities that now is available. Finally, the last word is very important related to AI. We have a lot of initiatives for AI development, but we need to care, to observe, and to create a plan for AI deployment. That's a key point that I'd like to finish my presentation. Thank you, Jefferson, for the invitation.
Thank you very much, Claudio, for this broad approach of the evaluations of the maturity of organizations. And I'll start with one question for you, Claudio, then another question for Gustavo. Claudio, in your experiences, what are the main challenges to start or to have the process of evaluating telehealth services or the digital maturity in organizations?
Well, for me, Jefferson, it's funny to say sometimes I see the lack of vision of C-level in terms of the importance of the digital transformation. This lack of vision, the strategic vision, it's the beginning of everything. The first, the CEO needs to have a vision that digital health, AI, the whole stuff, it's something that needs to be used, investing in this And sometimes I don't see this vision. So for me, is the starting point. That's for me, it's the biggest challenging when we start this kind of assessment. But sometimes we overcome this, showing the benefits of use health information technology tools. But something is hard. Something is hard.
Okay, I think very important points, culture, vision, mindset. It's really important for that. And Gustavo, in your opinion, what are the steps that AI still needs to take for increasing its adoption by physicians and physicians?
Well, you know, this is a good question. And I think the first step is to overcome what I would say that, you know, physicians being afraid of AI and being afraid of being replaced by AI. So Claudio has showed a very good sentence that physicians and nurses and every other healthcare professional who uses AI is going to be like, you know, an upgraded healthcare professional. So I think this is the first step. We need to have more educational knowledge, more training, and in an era with large language models, including ChatGPT, I like to say that we are going to be judged not by the answers we give, but by the questions we make. So the main point is to teach we as healthcare professionals how to use ChatGPT and other AI softwares and how to make the good questions.
Thank you very much, Gustavo. And now we reach the end of our panel, Challenging Digital Health from Telemedicine to AI, one of the several panels of the high quality symposium Converge to Accelerate. Thank you very much for both of you for being here with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Tori, are you still with us?